The greatest amount of wasted time is the time not getting started. That was a quote from Dawson Trotman, and that's true. Past couple of weeks, being away from the show, been working on taxes, made me realize that probably would have been a lot easier to have done a little bit each month with regards to taxes, but we tend to procrastinate on things we really don't like to do because we can always find something more important to do other than the thing we really need to do. Dawson Trotman was the founder of the Navigators, a faith ministry founded in 1933 based on discipleship. And discipleship really is instilling discipline, and discipline is self-control, and self-control is what it takes for us to get started. It's a powerful force in our life. Solomon's wisdom even tells us that. He says that he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who can take a city. And that really is the concept of self-control. There was a book written back in 1905 by William George Jordan called The Kingship of, or called Self-Control, Its Kingship and Majesty, and it's a number of short stories in there. And there was a very good, one of the short stories, very good, Kingship, The Kingship of Self-Control. And so I thought I'd just kind of go through a little of the items that he talked about in that short story. He says, he starts out and he says, man has two creators, his God and himself. His first creator furnishes him with the raw material of his life and the laws and conformity with which he can make that life what he will. His second creator, himself, has marvelous powers he rarely realizes. It is what a man makes of himself that counts. He says, when a man fails in life, he usually says, I am as God made me. When he succeeds, he proudly proclaims himself a self-made man. Man is placed into this world not as a finality, but as a possibility. Man's greatest enemy is himself. Man in his weakness is the creature of circumstances. Man in his strength is the creator of circumstances. Whether he's a victim or a victor depends largely on himself. Man is never truly great merely for what he is, but ever for what he may become. And that's where really you want to be. It's not about getting what you do done, but about what you become done. Until man be truly filled with the knowledge of the majesty of his possibility, until there come to him the glow of realization of his privilege to live the life committed to him as an individual life for which he is individually responsible, he's merely groping through the years. He says, with this broadening, stimulating view of life, he sees how he may attain his kingship through self-control, and the self-control that is seen in the most spectacular instances in history and in the simplest phases of daily life is precisely the same in kind and quality, differing only in degree. This control man can attain if he only will. It is but a matter of paying the price. And the power of self-control is one of the great qualities that differentiates man from the lower animals. He's the only animal capable of moral struggle or a moral conquest. And every step in this progress of the world has been a new control. At each moment of man's life, he is either a king or a slave. As he surrenders to a wrong appetite, to any human weaknesses, as he falls prostrate in hopeless subjection to any condition, to any environment, to any failure, he's a slave. As he day by day crushes out human weaknesses, masters opposing elements within him, and day by day recreates a new self from the sin and folly of his past, then he is a king. So goes on and talks more about self-control, but he really brings it down to the end. And his final statement in there, he says, each moment must be a victory for man. Will he be king or will he be slave? Really, the answer rests with him. And that's what we're going to look at when we come back, is what is it about ourselves that we need to change? Self-control is probably the biggest aspect of that. And so we'll come back and begin our discussion here on Solomon on Blast.
This is a story about control. control. Control of what I say, control of what I do. And this time I'm gonna do it my way. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Are we ready? I am. 'Cause it's all about control. And I've got lots of it.
Okay, we're back with more of Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. If you want to stream us, powertalklive.com, or if you don't get a chance, you can pick up our past shows on solomononblast.com. Right there on the main page, we'll have them up, and you can listen to them at your own leisure. So we're talking about self-control this morning, and like I said, Solomon's pretty clear. He says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." And some of the items that were in that article or that short story with regards to self-control really point that out, that there's a lot of power in somebody that has the ability to control themselves, because I think that's where, obviously, people's downfall is usually the lack of control in their lives versus some other outside influence. It's typically, I guess you could say, it's more of an inside job that ends up causing the biggest problem in a lot of areas, and self-control is one of those. And I think that when you have the ability to build up self-control, you're obviously going to be able to do the things you need to do. Like I said, I spent a week and a half working on taxes. I probably could have done a lot more been able to do a lot less of that if I'd done it in small chunks throughout the year. So I got to work on that myself.
I'm listening to you, Doug, here, and let me throw something out of left field, which is something I can't help but do. So I'm thinking maybe one of the reasons why people have such difficulty with self-control more and more, and I really think a lot of it is how you're brought up, what you're taught about self-discipline, is that today most people are convinced, at least philosophically, they are the masters of their own destiny. And let me get somewhere with this. And okay. what I'm saying is they don't know the difference between self-control and the idea that they control everything about themselves. They don't know that. The truth is, it's a delusion to think that you can ever be fully in control of your path, right?
Right.
Because life is going to come at you. There are going to be people that you meet that are more powerful than you are. They'll have influence over you that you don't see today. There's going to be options, opportunities, situations that are out of your control that are going to one day teach you the hard way that life doesn't work that way. So here's what I'm getting at. I think people overburden themselves in a sense with their capacity. They overburden their capacity to reasonably rule their own life by trying to carry this big burden on their shoulders that somehow they're supposed to control everything.
Everything.
That they
right.
cannot control. And consequently, a lot of people get caught in the spokes of the whole process, you right. know. They don't know where to begin and where to end. And so it's almost extremely bipolar in the way it plays out. Either you're in full control of your life and you get to be whatever you want, and if you just willed yourself and practice enough, you're going to be Michael Jordan. Or the other side is, I can do nothing. I don't even want to get out of bed. It's 4 o'clock. You know, leave me alone. Turn off my phone. Just stay away from me.
Right.
And they're just like powerlessness, you know.
Yeah, and there was a study done by a guy by the name of Dr. Martin Seligman back in 1967, and he did some experiments on three different groups of dogs. So, okay, for the animal lovers, sorry, 1967 probably wasn't as big a deal. Anyways, the experiment was that he would shock these dogs with some electric shock, and in the one group, the dogs were able to just run away. And then the second group, the dogs weren't able to do anything. They were tied in place. And the third group, they wouldn't be as, I guess, aggressive in terms of the shocking on the dogs, and it wasn't as consistent. And what happened was that the second group of dogs that didn't have any control over the ability to respond to the shock ended up basically depressed, and what he called was they had a learned helplessness. They just gave up completely. So they no longer had any kind of control, and they gave up figuring that they just had to suffer through everything. And they repeated it on other animals. Now, they didn't repeat the electroshock part of it, but I guess some of his other studies, he actually applied it to babies and humans, and the results were the same. Once they had been exposed to a situation over which they had no control, they continued to feel helpless, even in situations where they did have control. So I think that's kind of what you're alluding to in some cases, that you get into a situation where you don't have control, and you just apply it to everything. I'm helpless at that point. And that's what he was pointing out. It's a learned condition of helplessness.
You know, that reminds me of this proverb I've heard for many years, which I think is generally true. You know, this is not a Bible verse, but right. It's generally true that God will not do for you what you can do for yourself. So then it's about learning which is which, right? And if you're going to be in control of your own life.
Right. And there's that brings to mind the saying where, you know, God give me the strength to be able to tell the difference, right, between those things I can control.
Serenity prayer.
Right. What I can and what I can't control, and give me the wisdom to be able to tell the difference. And in this particular case, these people feel there is no hope. Now, one of the things that Seligman discovered in his study was that there were about a third of those that were of those dogs in that were had that feeling of helplessness, but they were able to bounce back, and they were able to basically unlearn that helplessness. And a lot of it, I think, once he went into it with people and stuff, was being able to understand that it's not an always condition. He points out that there's three viewpoints. It's me, it's all a me always everything view. It's always happening to me, and everything happens bad to me, and I can't do anything about it. Versus it's not me, it's not always, and it's not everything. And that control group that was able to bounce back had that aspect of it's not me, not always, not everything. But those that took the other viewpoint of their situation, it's me, always, everything, weren't able to overcome that.
Well, there's a fascinating probably insight here into why are some people winners. There was a tremendous documentary on Kobe Bryant. You know, this is Kobe Bryant's last year in the NBA. And he kind of opens up, and, you know, he's not been a real popular guy through most of his career. But he talked about going through his experience, you know, where he was accused of rape in Colorado a number of years ago. And he said he would, after that, even though the legal situation cleared up, every arena he went into around the league that was not in L.A., you know, was brutal. They were just saying terrible things, the worst thing you can only imagine.
Right.
And so he said he had to dig deep inside and decide that he was going to take control of the situation, and basically talked about tapping this anger side of himself.
Okay.
And what I'm, you know, I'm not so much saying, well, that's what you need to do. You need to get really ticked off at the world. But It was his way of gaining control over what he could control.
Right.
He couldn't control the arena, couldn't control all the, you know, stuff being said about rape and whatnot, but he could control himself. And he was honestly angry about it. He felt alienated, but he said he used it as a power source to drive and propel himself to go to another level. And I think one of the greatest stories about his life, and probably any NBA player, is that they could recover from something so brutal. And I'm not saying he wasn't responsible for his part in that. I'm just saying to recover from that and to find a championship level in himself, I think kind of describes what you're saying. There are people that can do that.
Right.
There are people that can say, I can't control this, but I can control that.
I saw an interview with him.
I'm going to narrow into what I can control.
Yeah, I saw an interview with him, and he talked about that. So it may have been we both saw the similar type thing where he basically said, I'm going to embrace being the bad boy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go use it to my advantage. And that kind of drove him to be as successful as he was.
But somebody whose personality was less intense or less, let's call it what it is, less able, would have said, their ego would have been here. I'm very popular. Certainly the girl at the hotel loves me. And everybody loves me. I'm great. God made me to be this exceptional person everybody bows down to. But when the script flipped, would have been a basket case, right?
Right.
In a sanitarium. And saying, you know, my whole world is over. But the ability to say, I can't control everything, but I can control me, is pretty amazing. And I think it's very unique. If you did a study of true champions, I bet you they all have this unique ability to say, I can't do that, but I can do this.
Yeah, and in this interview that I saw, he's already got his whole next career planned out. He's working on books. He goes to the office. He says he writes. The man has a huge amount of self-control when you look at his life. He's, like I said, he's got time set aside that he's already writing. He's putting together a whole business model. And he's driven to take another career path that is completely outside of his basketball arena. And he said he just came to the realization at one point that I'm done and I'm going to go take this approach. So he has spent, I think it was like the last year and a half, already working on developing his new business model and going forward. And I could see in that interview that here's a guy that you never saw the level of self-control and drive that he has outside of the basketball arena. But it's there innately.
Now that we're still talking about sports, I know this is not the sports program, but no. Jerry Rice, the former San Francisco 49er wideout, you know, broke all these records, but when Randy, Randy Moss from Marshall, you know, Randy Moss's first few years in the NFL were over the top. In fact, they were on a pace to break Rice's records, and they asked Jerry Rice if he thought Randy Moss was going to one day surpass him, and he said no. I mean, just bluntly, no. And you say, well, you know, how could he be so cocksure? He said, because Randy doesn't work hard enough. And he went on to say that he didn't take a vacation until after 10 years of being in the league. Every offseason, he'd turn around
and work.
And work.
Train to
and
be ready.
Run up fields. And he said he invited Randy Moss to work out with him. He said, I'm going to help this guy. And Randy Moss said, you're crazy, man.
It's break
this
time.
This is the offseason. I got to get some rest. And so he was very, I mean, this was way back when Randy Moss was still a hot commodity. Uh-huh. He said, nah, he'll never do it. And he was right. Randy Moss fluttered at the end of his career. He was here. He was there. He was a little everywhere. But he never could pull it together the same way Rice did.
Because he saw the different the
ability. It was all work ethic.
Because
he certainly had the ability to do it.
Yeah, having the talent to do it, but having the self-control to apply it are two different things entirely. And, you know, The study, when he was looking at these people that took the viewpoint of, you know, the not me, not always, not everything, when they ran into problems, they believed that other people or circumstances were what were causing the problems. It wasn't always me, right? And that it was a temporary situation, so it's not always going to be there. And in reality, it's not going to affect everything in your life. It's a small part of your life. And so I think that is what allows you to really get over that mindset of, well, I can't do it. I'm just going to give up. And I remember when I was going to the U of A, there were some physics classes that I was taking, and I just remember some of those tests thinking, this is going to kill me. But something along the lines made me realize at one point early on was that this test is 1 hour or maybe 2 hours out of my entire life. So why would I put that much pressure on myself or stress on myself to deal with, you know, 1 or 2 hours out of my entire life? It wasn't like I wasn't going to study for it and try to do it, but I wasn't just going to put so much pressure on myself hoping that, you know, I got to be perfect about
putting it all into perspective.
Yeah, put it into perspective. You're looking at 2 hours out of your life. It can't be that significant overall, especially when it comes to physics, because...
Well, and you're, there's something really important about self-control here and self-possession. Again, it doesn't mean you are the master of the universe. In fact, it's an acute understanding that you're not.
Right.
That you couldn't. Hey, it's 1 hour. Physics is big. I can't. You know, one of the things that you see in the story of Job, you know, and he's like one of the great mysteries in the Old Testament is Job. They don't even know. They're not even sure of his. Of where he places on the timeline. You know, that's all still a question mark. But he's the one that added for the ages, and anyone paying attention should make sure they get this, they download this plug-in here,
right.
Is that faith has to have a reverse gear to it. Because he said, what the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. And that statement there was saying that when you believe in God, that not everything is always forward. It's not like, and this is how a lot of people have superficial faith, you only have a forward gear. So, as long as everything's going good for you, yeah, thank God. But when things go negative, you don't know how to deal with it because you think you're supposed to be in control of everything. Your faith is supposed to make you the master of the universe all over again, except you just have a religious version of that idea. Right. But it isn't. There are times you run into roadblocks, you run into failure, you run into things that are overwhelming for you, and you have to actually, by faith, go backwards, right?
Right. That is a big part of it. Yeah, faith.
It's a part of self-control is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The ability to understand limitations and reverse. And nobody wants to reverse. Nobody wants to like, oh, gosh. Yeah. Have you ever been in a traffic jam in Africa?
Never been.
Some of the best driving I've ever seen in my life was this guy named Edward driving in Africa. I think he drove like 3 blocks backwards. And flipped the car around to get into another road. And I mean, there are people with carts and walking across. I mean, he was like, hey, went 3 blocks backwards. But that's sometimes life is like that, right?
Yeah, you've got to take a different route and be able to handle that.
And be able to handle that reality.
Right.
That I've been going this way, but I can't go this way anymore. It's going to cost me so much time to go that way, backwards. But such is life, right?
Right. And it's in those situations that you can really tell whether or not you've got the self-control that you need to have. I mean,
because it's very emotional at that point.
Right. You don't have any control. In a traffic jam, you know, you get stuck behind a whole bunch of cars because there's an accident or whatever. You don't have any control at that point in time. You're not going anywhere. So how well do you handle that situation and make use of what you've got at that point in time? So we'll discuss the other half of that when we come back after this break. And that the other half of that is instead of self-control, I think what we've been seeing, obviously a lot of, is a self-esteem approach to life, not a self-control approach. So we'll come back with more of Solomon Blast right after we take this break. We'll be right back. We're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live, and we're discussing self-control. And the other aspect of self-control that Solomon points out in Proverbs, he says, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. Now, if you understand the time frame in which Solomon is writing this, cities, having a wall around a city was the only way you protected yourself from the roving bands of marauders and barbarians that would come in and pillage and whatnot. Not everybody had their own house with the, you know, the deadbolt on the door and the
security system,
ADT security system with the sign out front, or the German Shepherd staked at the door barking away. So city walls were important. Without those, you were pretty much left very, very vulnerable. And that really is the aspect of not having self-control, is what he's saying. You don't have a rule over your own spirit, your own self-control. You're going to be just like those cities, and anything is going to come in. And when times are tough, when some outside force is attacking you, you're not going to be able to manage it. You're going to get overrun by that outside force. And I think today we've seen that instead of promoting self-control in kids, the school systems have promoted this whole concept of self-esteem. And that all came from a psychologist by the name of Nathaniel Brandon. Back in 1969, he published a paper called The Psychology of Self-Esteem. And he argued that feelings of self-esteem were the key to success in life. But the problem was, there's really true self-esteem really has two components. One is feeling good, and the other is doing well. And his whole viewpoint of it was, well, you've got to get the kids to feel good so that they do well, instead of the right order of things, which is do well and you'll feel good about it. And I think you see that in our school systems, and it became a big deal. California adopted it, and I think we've seen the results of it, that self-esteem, you know, I can feel good about myself, is more important than doing well and controlling myself.
Yeah, they got, you know, as they say, the cart in front of the ox. And there have been lots of people who are successful will tell you they went through periods of their lives, their childhood, their teenage years, where they really felt insecure and uncertain about who they were. But because they were so good at something, it changed the dynamic of their lives, right? People Absolutely. Saw how good they were. Yeah. People responded to them. Someone thought they were great, and they emotionally adjusted to that, and they started to grow and find themselves within that context, you know? But to not have any success, and then to say you should feel like you are a success, it's embarrassing. It's like it's delusional.
It's
right?
Empty calories at that point, right? It's like cotton candy.
Well, there's a reason why people are insecure, because they have rational minds that are adding up the score.
Right.
You know,
and I think everybody has that.
What you really want to do is you want to teach people how to win, and you want to teach them to do what they do very well, right?
Right.
So they can get some confidence.
We're all given specific talents in our lives. So the person that goes out and tries to be the Kobe Bryant, but he's, okay, my height, you know, 5'6", isn't going to do what Kobe Bryant can do and with the talent that he has. But we each have our own individual talent, and if you can find that talent and apply it and apply self-control when you do it versus applying the self-esteem without it.
This is why I think, in spite of all the excesses, and there are many, attached themselves to sports or that are sports, I still think they're extremely valuable in our culture, because it's still based on winning and losing ultimately. And even in sports, they all know you don't just put a rookie quarterback in right. most cases, you know.
Maybe at the
or
at
he'll
the,
end up on a binge like Johnny Manziel. Right. You just don't do that. You have to develop people. You don't put them in situations to fail. Their confidence will be shot. They have to win a little bit, get some confidence, become good, and then they grow in their skill set. Right. They emerge to be the player that they, you know, potentially can be. Yet when it comes to the general public and society, we're telling everybody they're great when they haven't even begun to discover the latent excellence, if it's there, in their lives.
Right.
And you're feeding them this line before they're actually touching it. And deep inside, they know you're lying to them.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They know you're lying.
Right. And if you don't have that skill set, you feel like, okay, I can't fit in. Nothing's going to work out for me. The whole everything always.
Oh, and these poor kids, they're told all this junk and they know it's not true. And I think it just reinforces, it pushes them to even a deeper level of uncertainty because nothing's true. Nothing's real, here's what, the self-esteem delusion, though, I think is, let's face it, we're both free market economy guys, but let's face it, the free market has exploited this to the umpth degree. Every commercial on TV exploits this lie, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's advertising.
You're
it's
going
marketing.
To be this amazing person if you buy a NordicTrack.
Right.
And
all you got to do is whatever, drink
so
whatever,
this
and
comes
you're the
from
most
both sides.
Interesting man alive.
of the universe. Exactly. Dos Equis, man, is going to make you a really interesting person. You're going to turn into Ernest Hemingway if you drink this beer. But the truth is that this is, it's how you get over on people. You tell them what they want to hear, and you sell them something, and you make sure that you're somewhere else by the time they discover it didn't work.
You're addressing their insecurity with a means of overcoming it.
I remember having this extremely cynical thought going into like a Barnes & Noble a few years ago, and I was looking just for a simple book on grammar. And, so you go to the yellow and orange section, for dummies, Idiot's
yeah.
Guide to. And I was just looking at all the different titles, and I was amazed, first of all, at that time, how that turned into a cottage industry.
Oh, yeah.
It was huge. DOS for Dummies turned into, like, this incredible cottage industry. But I saw one, like, an Idiot's Guide to Writing Poetry. And the thought that went through my head was, come on, do we really want idiots writing poetry? I mean, at some point...
Flo's doing it now, even.
At some point, shouldn't talent and gifting measure a way into some of these? Can you really do anything that you want?
By reading
books. If you got a dream, go for it. But
right.
At some point, someone has to say, you got to discover who you are. And your limitations have to be... You can actually make them work for you instead of against you, instead of you denying them.
Right.
Self-control understands they're there, and so I have to work within myself.
Right. I heard read an article yesterday with regards to Phil Mickelson. Well, he didn't even make the cut to the Masters this year, whereas last year he ended up second place. This year he didn't make the cut. He was 7 over. The cut was 6, so he's not even playing the rest of the tournament. And he made the comment in there that he says, I really didn't control myself on this course these past few days. And I thought, wow, to actually say that, it was your fault, not blame anybody else, it was his control over it. It kind of brought into light that you have to have that perspective of who's in charge here when it comes to, especially those individual sports like golf. I mean, there really isn't anybody out there, trying to tackle you in the middle of your backswing like football or anything else. So it is a very much a self-discipline associated with that. And I remember in eighth grade I took golf lessons. And one of the kids that was on the team with us or on the club with us or in the class was very, very good at it. And I watched him play and stuff. And at that point in time I realized there's no way I will ever be a professional golfer. But I accepted that at that point in time. Doesn't mean I didn't enjoy golfing and continue to do it for a number of years, throughout my life. It's just I could tell the difference between his skill set and my skill set, and he had a very natural skill set to be able to play golf like that.
So self-control, it involves a little bit of self-assessment.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to look at what's in your tank and be able to use that wisely and carefully and appropriately, right? It's
right.
Not just you going off in any direction that you think you want.
Which is kind of the self-esteem aspect is, you can do whatever you want, if you just put your just apply, go now do that, it.
You know, this is the whole bucket list thing. And I realize when you're young, a bucket list is part of, you know, you collect all these ideas growing up, and I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that, I'd like to run with the Bulls, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But what you see is that sometimes people, they understand self-control in terms of finding a goal, right? Mm. Accomplishing a goal. I want to get here. I'm going to save money. I'm going to go there. And all those really are the tools of self-control,
yeah,
of having a goal and accomplishing that goal. But how many people have are really good at fulfilling the items on their bucket list but don't have any goals for a virtuous life? Now, I mean that in the whole Plato and Aristotle sense, you know what I'm mm-hmm. saying, about being a certain kind of person. It's all the same thing, but they can go the short term, but they have no long term, no big picture. What kind of human being am I, and where am I going, you know?
And he made that point in that short story. He said it's not really what you do, it's what you become. And if you don't have a vision for what you want to become versus just what you want to do, you're missing the whole point, I think, is what he was pointing out there, that life is more than just what you do. It's what you become eventually.
Yeah, at some point on that bucket list, you have to say, you know what, I'm going to have to broaden my my worldview here to become this kind of person, right, rather than just... And I think a lot of people, they get to the end of that bucket list, and they're very depressed. I've tried this, yeah. I've tried that, I've been here, I've been there, the bucket's empty.
And so are they.
Exactly. There's nothing there other than, you know, some good times.
Right. And Solomon kind of points out the whole aspect of this, I think, from the self-esteem viewpoint of things when he says in Proverbs 25, 6, and 7, he says, "Do not exalt yourself in the presence of a king, and do not stand in the place of great, for it is better that he says to you, 'Come up here,' than you should be put lower in the presence of the prince." And I think what he's pointing out there is somebody that's exalting themselves, this whole self-esteem movement that I just have to feel good, I deserve to be up there, but you haven't done anything to really achieve a presence before the king. You haven't become something where you can be there. He's saying you got to watch out because you'll probably end up a lot further back in the line sitting with, you know, the servants instead of standing before the king there. And the irony of the whole self-esteem movement is that when you really look at it, the original approach was to try and eliminate problems with kids' depression and that kind of thing, and it's actually gone the opposite direction. Levels of childhood sadness, pessimism, and depression have actually risen because of this whole self-esteem movement, because they're not approaching the problem in the correct way, really. So the habit of self-control, it just isn't going to happen overnight. You have to work at it. You have to have that plan in place. Like you said, you have to have a goal, a vision for who am I going to be at some point in time. And Solomon says at the beginning of Proverbs, he says, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And that right there is the view that you have to take when it comes to self-control.
Well, you know, it's interesting about this. You know, there's another guy from sports, James Harrison, from the Pittsburgh Steelers, made the news a few months ago because he threw away his kids' participation trophies. Did you read that story?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he's, you know, you join in the league and they come home with a trophy. And
trophy,
they didn't win a couple years ago, and they didn't win, so he threw them out. Said, no. Life doesn't go like this. And so I think that the point is, getting back to the whole self-esteem thing and self-control, that it doesn't empower you. It takes away power from you to do that.
That your self-esteem
Guy knows what it is to win. He knows what it is to excel. He knows what it is to pay the price and to get to achieve the highest level of his game. And he's not going to let his kids fall for that. He's like, man, we got the real thing. Why would I let you do this when, you know, you have the potential to get the real deal? And I think it was very bold. I think it's a great story. And it's tough, but there's a lot of people that are not James Harrison and his kids that will never, ever taste that level of success in professional athletics. But there are other things that they're just going to have to find, right? You just can't will it onto them because we want you to feel good about yourself.
Right.
Because I think ultimately, again, the real point is that it's not empowering, that it takes a power away from you.
Right. And really, everybody is looking to be in control of their lives and feel in control of their lives. But if you don't have any kind of effective plan to do that, then you get discouraged. You can get discouraged pretty quickly, especially, you know, where your focus is on how you can make that change to be able to get into a state of control. If your focus is more internally, can you be successful? Can you control your own behavior? If you look internally, you're going to be able to do a lot better job of approaching self-control than if you're looking externally for, you know, I'm the victim. Like I say, everything else is to blame, and I'm going to find somebody else to control my life. And that's really what prison amounts to, right? They think they're in control by committing whatever crimes they are, and they end up actually under more control and less control in their lives when they end up in prison. And if you don't see that, if you don't think about it from internal versus external, you're going to end up in a situation where you don't have the control you're looking for.
Yeah, where you have to take responsibility to rule your life. I saw something as a young teenager that scared me. I had an older relative who was free to do whatever he wanted to do as a kid. I guess the word would be spoiled. And, I mean, this guy was very talented, and his father was very proud of him. I mean, he had some skills and on all, but he did whatever he wanted. And so, as a teenager, I remember he was just I was a young kid, he was underage, driving a car through his neighborhood, knocking over trash cans as they used to put him out in front of the houses. Just did whatever he wanted, and he was fearless. But I ran into them like 10 years later. Now I'm a young teenager, and he's like 25, 26, because he had gotten in trouble. And he had been released like on probation, and he's with his parents now. And I remember him totally under his dad's control at 26 years old.
Just the opposite.
Exactly.
Condition he was hoping for.
You know, he was free as a bird at 16 or 15. And at 26, he was like, I guess he was released to his parents.
Right, under their
care or whatever. And I remember just being absolutely just looking at that, I was 14 or 15, and I was thinking, man, this is not how life's supposed to go. Even I got it then. This is not how life's supposed to go. You know, no discipline. Now, and that's it. Either you learn how to control yourself, time's going to come when someone else is going to tell you what to do.
Right.
And how to live and how to conduct yourself.
And I think if you understand that self-control really achieves the greatest gains, then, and you look for that in the future, that's where you can put in place a plan and a idea that says, I have a purpose, because I can see that if I take that little bit of self-control today and keep adding to it, because it is developing a habit and not just willy-nilly, okay, I'll do it today but not tomorrow, but developing that habit, that in the long term, there is going to be some kind of reward at the end, just like most of these athletes. They understand that they got to put Jerry Rice, he knew he had to put the effort in, but there was going to be a reward at the end of that. And we always try and bring it back around to the one greater than Solomon, which is Jesus Christ himself. And in Galatians, it says, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness. And the last one is self-control. And the rest of that verse says, against such things there is no law, which really points out that if you are willing to put yourself into a situation where you have control, self-control, the rest of the laws and rules you don't have to worry about. So it actually makes it easier on your life if you take it down to a point of self-control. And Jesus said, who then is that faithful and wise servant, steward whom his master will make rule over his household to give them their portion? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find doing what he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will make him ruler over all that he has. So when you can, it's the concept of if you're faithful over the little things, you're going to be given rulership over the larger things. So we're at the end of the show for this week. And as usual, keep thinking wisely. We'll be back with Solomon on Blast next week. Thank you.